Welcome to Tour Guide Tell All. Last week we talked about World War II veterans buried in Arlington Cemetery, and obviously we couldn't talk about all of them, but we wanted to talk about one more in this mini episode. Erin Miller is the author of Final Flight, Final Fight, which tells the story of her grandmother, who was a WASP during the war. Erin's grandmother's last wish was to be buried at Arlington National Cemetery, but regulations did not allow it, until Erin and her family got involved. Tour Guide Tell All is brought to you by the guides of Free Tours by Foot, Washington, D.C., where we tell the fun and sometimes scandalous stories of American history. You can support us by becoming a patron at patreon.com/tourguidetellall. This week we have a special one-off offer where you can also purchase an autographed copy of Erin Miller's book, Final Flight, Final Fight. Find out more in the show notes or on our Twitter at tourguidetell. After the break, we chat with Erin about her and her grandmother's story.
A tour of her own is the ultimate guide to women's history in Washington, D.C. and beyond. Learn more about our women's history tours and other special programs on our website, www.atourofherown.com, and be sure to follow us on social media.
So welcome to Tour Guide Tell All. I'm Becca, here with our very special guest, Erin Miller, who I'll tell you about in just a moment. If you've been listening to our podcast this month, you know that May 2020 marks the 75th anniversary of the end of the Second World War. With the coronavirus, there have been a lot of commemorative events canceled this month and in the coming weeks to honor this important anniversary. So for the entire month of May, we've been posting special podcasts, content, YouTube videos, all that good stuff, all about World War II. And I have somebody very special here to share her story and the story of her grandmother, Erin Miller. So hi, Erin.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Of course. We're so happy to have you here. So the reason we asked you here is your grandmother had a very special role in World War II. I think a role that a lot of people today still aren't always familiar with. So can you tell us a little bit about what your grandmother did during the war?
During World War II, my grandmother served with the Women Air Force Service Pilots, which was the first group of female military pilots for the United States Armed Forces. My grandmother was a training pilot after she finished training, so she trained men on the BT-13 for instrument training, and she was stationed at Las Vegas Field, which today is known as Nellis Air Force Base.
I just think that is so cool. I mean, you know, I have the pleasure of often talking about World War II with students and visitors, and I think a lot of people don't realize that there were 300,000 women who served in uniform during World War II, and they did things like pilot planes and actually put themselves into harm's way. And there were quite a few women who were pilots, about 1,100, I believe, ultimately got their wings as WASPs. But can you talk a little bit about what your grandmother was doing during the war? So she was piloting, but what exactly does that mean?
So my grandmother, Elaine Harmon, started her training with the Women Air Force Service Pilots in Texas in April of 1944. And she, along with her fellow pilots, trained to do many tasks, including towing targets, training other pilots, and a variety of other tasks. One of the tasks was flying planes around to break in the engines. And the towing targets is something people usually find pretty interesting, which meant that they towed banners behind the airplanes, kind of like what you see at the beach with ads for beer or whatever on it. And men on the ground would shoot at the targets to practice anti-aircraft fire. My grandmother, after training, as I mentioned, went to Las Vegas and was a trainer. So she trained men on a BT-13 for instrument training. But the WASP did a lot of different tasks, like I mentioned. 38 WASP actually died in service. Being a test pilot was fairly dangerous. The planes are new or repaired, or you're trying to test out planes. And 38 of them, as I mentioned, died in various crashes or incidents.
But it definitely sounds to me like really, really important jobs and jobs that needed to be done, and plenty of high risk jobs having these new recruits shooting at their planes.
Yeah.
Again, I think it's something a lot of people don't even realize that women were doing. We just recorded an episode about Arlington National Cemetery and World War II figures who are buried at Arlington. And one of them is Henry Hap Arnold, who was commanding general of the United States Army Air Forces. And he said in 1944 at one of the WASP graduation ceremonies that it is on the record that a woman can fly as well as a man. So I think they played such an important role in showing that women could do that sort of job, which is amazing. Now, what happened for your grandmother, though, as the war was ending and after the war?
In December of 1944, my grandmother left the Women Air Force Service program after it had been canceled by the government and went back home to Maryland, to Baltimore. However, my grandfather, her husband, was still overseas. He was not in the Army, but he was working for a civilian company in Asia, and he was still overseas working, so she didn't have much to do, and she said she was kind of bored, so she ended up moving to California for a while and working as an air traffic controller at Oakland Airport.
Now, did she continue flying after World War II, whether recreationally or professionally?
And when my grandfather came home from Asia later on, in 1945, they moved back to Maryland, and my grandmother eventually had four children and raised those kids, and my grandfather passed away during that time, so she became a single mom raising four kids, and unfortunately, she didn't continue with her flying career because of those circumstances.
I was reading, reading a little bit in the book and a little bit in some of the press coverage around when the book was written about when the United States Air Force was formed, and there were, I guess, after a big fight, sort of this chance maybe for WASPs to kind of put their name in if they wanted to be part of the Air Force, and that your grandmother did perhaps, I think, seek that or send a letter, but was rejected because she had children, right?
The Air Force was formed in 1947, and eventually they started a reserve program, which obviously we still have today. And they invited a lot of people who had previously served in different positions in the armed forces to become part of the Air Force Reserve, including my grandmother. And she went to meetings, she said, and went to the officers' club out here in Maryland. And she said it wasn't really that involved. But at a certain point, she received a letter explaining that she had been mistakenly invited to be part of the Air Force Reserve because she had children under the age of 18. So at that time, you couldn't have kids, and there were a lot of restrictions about who was married and all these things with the armed forces that we don't have anymore today. So they told her she couldn't be in it anymore, and she was no longer in it.
Which I'm sure was not a restriction they had on any male pilot who was joining the reserve. That's incredible. So I think that's one of the things about the story that I find compelling and sort of heartbreaking is that as the years go on after World War II, a lot of these women go back to their lives, they pursue other things. And I think the WASPs start to become sort of forgotten. People forget the role that they had played, and they weren't being recognized as veterans. Am I correct? Right?
Yes, you are correct.
So the question about veteran status is an interesting one. As I mentioned earlier, because the law to grant them status as members of the Army during 1944 when they were serving failed in Congress, they did not become formally part of the Army during the time of the war. They went home, went on with their lives, and I don't think in general, at least my grandmother didn't seem too concerned at that time about it. But as the years went on and people started talking more about the war and things they had done, they realized they should have been recognized as veterans and as active members of the Army. In the 1970s, the service academies started accepting women, and the Air Force started talking about having the first military pilots that were women. And my grandmother and her WASP friends were like, hey, we did that 35 years ago. Like, maybe we should go to Congress and remind them. So they lobbied Congress and got a bill passed that recognized their ability to petition the Department of Defense for recognition as veterans, which was granted eventually, and my grandmother received her DD-214 in 1979, 35 years after she left WASP service. But over the years, things unfolded, which meant that they were not fully recognized as veterans throughout the federal government, and there are different instances among various WASP of this happening. My grandmother had applied for a civil service job, and the Office of Personnel Management told her she couldn't get veterans' preference points. Later on, when she passed away, they told us she couldn't be buried at Arlington Cemetery because her veteran status only applied in the Department of Veterans Affairs. So there were all these different interpretations of what their veteran status meant from the law in 1977.
I think that's a really good point that you bring up. And we find this, I think, with veterans of all stripes and all sort of backgrounds, that they were really hesitant for so long to talk about what they'd experienced in World War II, which is why I feel like we're so fortunate to have some of these commemorations and events that we've had, which allow them a chance, those still living, to share their stories. So they did get veteran status in the 1970s. Your grandmother is still very much alive then. But what happened when your grandmother passed away?
My grandmother passed away in April 2015, and she wanted to be buried at Arlington National Cemetery. And this was not news to us. We knew that she wanted this. She had attended funerals there for some of her fellow WASP pilots. But when my mom got the paperwork together and called the cemetery, they eventually called us back and told us that the law from 1977 did not allow the WASP to be buried at Arlington Cemetery on their own merit. As I mentioned before, my grandfather was not in the service. He's buried at a civilian cemetery. And so my grandmother did not have the right to be buried as a spouse at Arlington Cemetery. So she wanted to be buried there on her own merit. And because of the law in 1977, the language was written to apply to laws administered by the Veterans Administration, which today is the Department of Veterans Affairs. And they administer roughly 136 cemeteries across the country. But Arlington National Cemetery is run by the Department of the Army. So they essentially told us that she's a veteran in one part of the federal government, but not another part of the federal government.
What I love is that you guys did not settle for that. You took the fight further.
So we felt that the most effective way to get this resolved was to get a law passed amending the law from 1977 to force the Army to recognize the service of the women Air Force service pilots for the purposes of being laid to rest at Arlington National Cemetery. There are people buried at Arlington National Cemetery who did not necessarily serve in the military. They have special exceptions, and there's a procedure for that. And even though they told us that my grandmother was not technically allowed because of the way the law was written, we could have applied for an exception, and likely she would have been accepted in that procedure. But we felt it was important to ensure that all the WASP were recognized for their service and not as something needing an exception. If they're eligible to be buried at a VA cemetery, it doesn't make any sense why they wouldn't be able to be laid to rest at Arlington, which is run by the Army, which is the branch that my grandmother flew planes for. So I launched a campaign to do public relations to get attention to the issue, and I did a news story here with a local reporter, and that got attention. Eventually, we got into Associated Press, which goes to news outlets all over the planet, and eventually that story got to Representative Martha McSally, who is an Air Force veteran serving in Congress, and now she's a senator. And her staff alerted her to this, and she and her staff decided to take up the issue, and she wrote legislation to amend the law from 1977 to allow the WASP to be buried at Arlington Cemetery on their own merit.
McSally herself, of course, a pilot, so very poignant, I think, for this story to relate to her and for her to want to be involved.
Like I said, our family just felt it was important to make sure that she was recognized for her service and all the WASP were recognized, even if they didn't want to be buried at Arlington, which most of them probably don't. It was important that their service be recognized equally. We weren't asking for anything special. You know, she served, and only because Congress didn't recognize it at the time, but she was doing the same job that male pilots were doing, and they were recognized. Although, of course, obviously male pilots went into combat, and my grandmother and her fellow WASP pilots did not. It was important that they were all equally recognized, and that's why we wanted to fight to have the law changed.
I know for people listening, it may seem weird that Arlington was so hard-lined, but Arlington National Cemetery is administered by the Department of the Army, and especially as we kind of reached into the 21st century, space was such a big concern and continues to be a big concern at Arlington. So when they sort of took a look at their regulations and were trying to find ways to sort of preserve space, they made some changes. You listen to this and you're like, oh gosh, that's so terrible. Why not just make an exception? But it sort of came from a good place of trying to make the space at Arlington more efficient and make sure that they weren't making special exceptions when they didn't need to. But of course, from my point of view, the WASPs having that veteran status really should have empowered them. So I think it's so wonderful you decided to take this not just to be a special exception for your grandmother, but to be legislation that could help include other WASPs in the future. So I think that's so wonderful. So when it came down to the legislation, from the time that McSally gets involved and introduces legislation to it being signed into law, about how long did it take?
So as I mentioned, my grandmother passed away in April of 2015. We applied to have her at Arlington. They eventually called us back. We sent paperwork out to our senator in August of that year. We got a letter back from the cemetery and our senator in October of that year. And then that's when we started the campaign to get attention and get the news story done. Eventually, when Martha McSally wrote the bill, it was introduced on January 6th, 2016. Passed through the House of Representatives unanimously on March 22nd of that year, and then was signed by President Obama on May 20th, 2016. So from the time Martha McSally introduced the legislation to the time that the president signed the bill was about 19 weeks, which in DC is pretty fast. So we were very happy that there was all this support, especially from Martha McSally to support this and the other representatives and members of Congress and the media and the public to get this pushed through really quickly so we could go ahead and bury my grandmother. And her funeral went ahead in September of 2016. So from the time she passed away till the time we laid her to rest was about 17 months, so almost a year and a half.
When your grandmother was buried at Arlington, I assume full military honors, right?
Arlington National Cemetery has several levels of funeral honors available. The highest honors include a caisson, which is a horse-drawn carriage that carries the casket to the plot, and people walk behind it as they attend the funeral. It also includes the folded flag, the bugler playing taps, and the gun salute, as well as the chaplain and the other members who participate. My grandmother received slightly below that. She didn't have a caisson, but we had a bugler and a chaplain and an honor guard present the flag to my mother and things like that with the gun salute. It depends on whether you were an officer, whether you were retired. You know, there's a lot of different factors involved.
So at what point in this process did you decide to write a book about this experience?
Throughout this process, as I continued to meet people, whether I was doing media stories or interacting with people on Capitol Hill, people continuously said something like, oh, this is such a great story, it would make a great book. And I would think, okay, sure, you know, I agree. And then it would just kind of go out of my head. I was very focused on getting the bill passed and making sure the story stayed current and news was paying attention to it and people were aware of it. And we continuously made social media posts and kept it going. And when the bill was finally signed by the president in May of 2016, I suddenly had a lot more time on my hands to think about everything that had happened. And I had, you know, books with notes that I had made for interviews or, you know, paperwork, emails, news stories, all this stuff. And I thought, hey, maybe I could write a book. So I collected all that stuff and kind of flipped through it and started thinking about, well, if I wrote a book, what would I include? And started kind of jotting down, brainstorming what I would do. And that summer, before my grandmother's funeral, I started the first draft of the book.
I think it's great. I first was introduced to you, your grandmother's story, and your book, Final Flight, Final Fight, through our friends at A Tour of Our Own. We call it Toho, but one of our A Tour of Our Own events, you spoke, much like you did today, about this experience. And I just found it so incredible. Not just your grandmother's story is amazing and I think so important, but I think your fight to sort of preserve that history, to keep that story alive for another generation, and to kind of preserve that, I think is so wonderful. I know you don't think of yourself as a historian, but that's what I think of you as, because you have done some things. So
I did major in history, so I have a little bit of history in me, I guess.
but part of the reason I wrote the book is
for that purpose. A lot of people in this country and around the world have no idea what it's like to go to the Senate and go to the House of Representatives and ask members of Congress to help you and sponsor a bill, and what does it mean and what is it like and what do you actually do? Like, how does it happen? What's the process? I realized when I was writing this, there aren't a lot of books about that. You know, there's books that talk about like the technical, like the Constitution and what, you know, but they don't talk about the actual experience of what that means and what happens, right? And so it's a really useful book on two fronts. I use it to teach young people about the process of legislating and how Congress works and what the different players are and the different parts and how does a bill go from different parts and become a law, and what is the media behind it and how do you help move it along. And I also talk about, obviously, the history of the Women Air Force Service pilots. And I also talk about my family and my grandmother and my relationship with her. So it's kind of those aspects all put together. And I use it to teach different groups about different aspects of those things.
It's really incredible. We'll be sure to link to your book in our show notes so that everybody can get a copy of the book. You know, this month, this year is the 75th anniversary of the end of World War II. This is really a big year because we're really towards the end of having that first person story from that generation. We're in the last few years, I think, of really having a chance to talk to the people who lived it, who experienced it, who made it happen. So if you wanted there to be sort of one takeaway for people listening about your grandmother and her life and her service, what would you want that to be?
My grandmother was obviously a member of the Women Air Force Service Pilots, which was a historic group during World War II, serving her country, you know, as now recognized as part of the military. And I know throughout her life, serving her community and her country was extremely important to her. She traveled all over the world, but she always felt like her community was very important. She was a volunteer with a literacy group. She always supported veterans and the military. And I think one takeaway would be there's always some way that you personally can contribute to your community and or your country. And it could be a small thing, it could be a big thing, but even small things can have big repercussions. And I think that's something that she would say to everybody. When she joined the WASH, she didn't know it was going to be a, you know, such a well-known thing, you know, 70 years later. She just wanted to do something to serve her country, and she had a pilot's license and it was available to her, and she felt like it was important. And I think that's important to her. Everyone has something to contribute, you know, and try to find what your talent is or what your skill is that you can contribute to your community.
I think that's such a great lesson, a great takeaway. Erin, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Again, if you're listening to our podcast, we'll have links to all of Erin's information and where to find copies of Final Flight, Final Fight in our show notes. Of course, you'll want to subscribe. Make sure you don't miss any of our episodes. If you also support us on Patreon, you'll get access to some special information and episodes early. So be sure to do that. So thank you so much, Erin. And thank you for listening.
Thank you for having me, and I appreciate also Tour of Her Own adding my grandmother's story and talking about Arlington and their different programs. It's very nice.
Yeah, we're so appreciative to our friends over at A Tour of Our Own, not just for the great women's history that they provide, but I think connecting us to stories like yours. So I really look forward to, hopefully when this is all over, having another event and getting to see you in person.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Tour Guide Tell All is the quarantine masterpiece of the Guides of Free Tours by Foot, DC. And as we mark the end of our special World War II focused month, we are also ending the stay-at-home order. But we're having so much fun with this podcast, and we hope that you are too. So we're going to keep at it. Even as tours are slowly resuming, you'll find us twice a week wherever you get your podcast. Don't forget to head over to our Patreon page, Tour Guide Tell All, to get a special offer, an autographed copy of Erin Miller's Final Flight, Final Fight. We want to thank her for joining us, and thanks to Becca Grahl for, as always, being a great interviewer. Tour Guide Tell All is Becca Grahl, Rebecca Fackner, Dan King, and Candon Arseniega. We do all the producing, recording, editing, brainstorming, and off-camera chatting with the supports of our patrons, so thank you. In our next episode, we honor Pride Week.
Frank Kameny, who does not have a law background, petitions the Supreme Court pro se, which means he does this on his own. They do not grant him cert. They don't hear his case. And so that's kind of the end of his suit for his reinstatement. And he goes on to really devote the rest of his life to gay activism. He helps to found the Mattachine Society, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. And he also organizes the first LGBTQ protest in front of the White House in 1965.